You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. So go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back. Thursday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher here with you, and we have a lot to talk about today. We have some more mailbag questions to answer as promised. We have Crossover Thursday with Locked On Colts in the second and third segments, but yeah, in this first segment, we're going to be answering mailbag questions still. There were a lot of great questions, and you know, rightfully so. We have a lot of great questions every week. Again, really thankful for them, and every question will be answered regardless of if it is on Wednesday with Cole, Thursday here with me, or Friday with Matthew Stevens when he's on the show. They all need to be answered. I know the questions are hard thought out questions and things that everybody wants to know, so I want to do my best here on the show to answer all of them and answer them well. I know Cole, Matthew, even Spencer, they all want to do the same things. All the guests want to do the same thing. So instead of rushing through 80 million questions, I like to get nice analysis on as many as we can fit in on, you know, a 30, 40 minute show. And then, you know, if there are some left over, we go and we answer them in the next shows throughout the week. So we'll get started right here, right now. More mailbag questions. Before we do that, though, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Again, anywhere there is a podcast, we are there. Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you subscribe, turn notifications on so you know when our content comes out. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at ChaosStriker34. So with all that being said, let's jump right into it, and we'll start off with a question that I really liked from Ryan DiLorenzo. And Ryan asks, so we don't have a third tight end. Is there a chance that they would try Dez Bryant in the Hayden Hurst role? And Ryan, this has been something that I think a lot of people have been talking about, maybe trying out Dez Bryant as that third tight end. Now, there's no question, you can kind of see it on the football field, that Baltimore is struggling without those three tight end sets that they used last season. And those three tight end sets were something that made Baltimore's offense really, really good. And you look at this from a holistic perspective, from what Baltimore is running now in 2020 on offense, what they were doing in 2019, we can even go back to 2018 if you really want to, and look at the second half of the season with Lamar Jackson's offense. Lamar Jackson is still a developing passer. What Spencer has talked about before, what I have talked about before, even a bit of what Cole and Matthew have talked about before, Lamar Jackson needs to play a little bit better football, but part of the reason I think he's struggling a little bit so far this season is because of the lack of checkdowns. And part of it is, in those three tight end sets, it's either run or pass in those sets. You have three huge guys on the field. It's not like they're five wide empty and you're like, all right, well, this is most likely either one of two things. It's a pass or it's a quarterback draw if a running back isn't put in motion and put at the line next to Lamar Jackson. But in three tight end sets, you can act like it's a run. You can really, really sell it. You can put three tight ends on the right side. You can split them up, put one on the left side, two on the right side. You can sell that, and then with the elite pass catching and route running ability that Mark Andrews has, if we talk about Hayden Hurst and his skill set, he has great hands. You talk about his ability both as a blocker and a receiver, and then Nick Boyle coming into his own, that gave defenses fits in 2019. What you're seeing now is they're trying to use Patrick Ricard as an inline tight end a bit. They're not really doing that, though. They're trying to run more 3-4 wide receiver sets, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, having three tight ends in there helps you in both the run and pass game because it keeps the defense guessing. Now in two tight end sets, it's a little less likely that Baltimore's running the football, and thus on passing downs where you might have three tight ends, you now have two, and that maybe takes the pressure off the box a little bit. But with Dez Bryant, I don't necessarily think they will try him out in this role, Ryan, and my reason is because I just don't think he's a good fit there. We don't know how he can block yet. If anyone is going to be used in that third tight end role this season, it would be a free agent signing, somebody who would come up from the practice squad. I maybe see a tight end transition from Miles Boykin in the offseason, but right now, I don't really expect that with Dez Bryant. I expect him to contribute as a wide receiver. Our next few questions here come from Eric Clark, someone who asked plenty of questions. Again, if you ask me questions, I will answer them no matter how many you ask me. His first question here, when it comes to Lamar, do you believe his bad decision-making comes from misreading coverage and believing something should be open based on his pre-snap diagnosis and practice, or simply choosing a side to throw to a not-looking backside? Eric, I think it's honestly a combination of both. Lamar Jackson, we have to remember, this guy is in his third year, yeah, but he's younger than Joe Burrow. That's big. He is still developing and he is improving. And my encouragement with Lamar Jackson, the reason I am encouraged is because he is improving from the aspect of being a better decision maker, of protecting his body, of not making as many careless turnovers, although we've seen that come back a little bit over the past two games Baltimore has played. But you look at his interceptions, you go back to Pittsburgh, week 5, 2019, and you go and you look at the interception in the second half from last week, that first drive for the offense interception that Alex Highsmith picked off. It was the same exact play, same exact side of the field in Baltimore territory, really just a different stadium, same opponent, different people picking off the football though. Alex Highsmith made a phenomenal play. He said in a press conference after the game that they had run something. Baltimore had run something similar early in the game. Highsmith guessed on it, and at the end of the day, Lamar Jackson did not see that linebacker coming. He did not see the underneath guy coming in that coverage. He's had an issue seeing underneath guys all season. We saw it against Philadelphia. We've seen it throughout his career. But in terms of Lamar Jackson, the coaches are going to have him improving on those. They go over it with him during the game. They go over it with him after the game. Lamar Jackson also has to do a better job at pre-diagnosing stuff before the snap, as you kind of mentioned here, Eric. It's a bunch of different things, progressing through your reads better, and as the season goes on, I expect him to improve in all of those categories. Another question from Eric, when it comes to Greg Roman, if you had to choose, one, does he need to get with Lamar and find what routes he's most comfortable throwing and get those routes open more creatively, or get better at making our runs and passes look more similar, which would tie them together better? Eric, I think this is more of the second thing. Lamar Jackson and Greg Roman, they're working together all the time that they can. They are getting together, they're working in practice, they're working post-practice, before practice. Lamar Jackson, if there's one thing that I think we all know about him, is that he is a very hard worker, and he wants to get better and help his team out. But what I think this is not necessarily creativity, although I do think it's lacking a bit in Greg Roman's offense this season. I think they need to do again. You talked about it with the three tight end sets. The three tight end sets disguises. It helps disguise whether it's going to be a run or a pass, because in those sets, you can really do either. I'm not saying you can't do either in a two tight end set, but at the end of the day, if you throw three tight ends on the field with one receiver as opposed to two tight ends and two receivers, most likely the defense is going to look at the three tight end look and say, okay, this has more of a chance of being a run. And then you also put into effect the RPO, which is it can either be a handoff off the middle, Lamar Jackson can take it on a bootleg, or he can pull it back and pass it. Those are three other different options, which just make it so confusing, so difficult, especially for the edge contain players. So I think it's more making the runs and passes blend together, and that would help, kind of like what we saw in 2019. Our final question from Eric here, he asks, when it comes to Hollywood, do you think we need more max protection plays to give us a better shot at hitting him deep, where the tape shows he has been open a lot, or do we incorporate him more in the short game and give Duvernay his role of deep decoy? Eric, I don't necessarily think the max protect will do a ton for Baltimore. I think what makes Baltimore's offense work and what should make it work if everything goes smoothly with the personnel they have, Lamar Jackson is having a decent amount of time in the pocket. Now, the offensive line has not been what it was in 2019. You can't dispute that. I can't dispute that. But for Baltimore, Hollywood Brown is getting open, as you kind of mentioned. We've seen on the tape, he gets open. It's just a matter of Lamar Jackson, again, kind of what you alluded to in one of your previous questions, going through his reads, diagnosing pre-snap, and making sure he understands the coverages both before and during. During is huge. During the play for Lamar Jackson. Duvernay being given the role of a deep decoy, it could work out. I think Marquise Brown is a phenomenal short, medium game pass catcher. But at the end of the day, you need to take those deep shots every once in a while, and right now Greg Roman is seemingly struggling to do that, especially early in ball games, where it could really be and have a huge impact on the game, especially if you hit on him. If you try it out on a 1st and 10, a 2nd and 10, you know, and maybe you don't hit. That's why I think 1st and 10 deep shots are really nice for this Baltimore offense. You can take a play action deep shot on 1st and 10, and it works. Or maybe it doesn't. Let's say it doesn't work. A deep shot play action pass on 1st and 10 is 2nd and 10. All right, so now what do you do? Maybe you run the football. Maybe you try another play action pass. But it gives you more options. And on a first down for a run heavy team where teams are expecting you to run the football, I think that it would kind of pay off if Baltimore took those deep shots a little earlier with Marquise Brown. Our final question here comes from Russ Parham, and Russ asks, my concern is the Ravens' inability to develop talent. They have to put people that address the mental aspect, the technical aspect of being an NFL quarterback around Lamar Jackson. My concern is we don't have anyone to truly mentor Lamar Jackson, especially through tough times. And Russ, this is an interesting point you make, and I think the difficulty with Baltimore, I don't think they have a difficulty developing talent. I think where it is developing, you know, maybe the offensive side of the ball more so than the defensive side of the ball. You talk about wide receivers, that's been a very big struggle for Baltimore. But at the end of the day, Lamar Jackson and his ability to develop, they have Robert Griffin III, first of all, as their backup, who I think is the perfect backup for Lamar Jackson in the whole system in general, because it gives somebody for Lamar Jackson, it gives somebody to Lamar Jackson who can go out there with him in practice, with him during games, and analyze what he sees from a quarterback in that system's perspective who has a similar skill set to him. Greg Roman is somebody who has been getting a lot of flack, but he is really instrumental in his development as well. And then I'd also kind of not shy away from James Urban, the quarterback's coach for Baltimore. I think if Greg Roman leaves in the offseason, James Urban is my perfect fit. He's been with Lamar Jackson for a while now. He's a good quarterback's coach, came over from Cincinnati where he was working with Andy Dalton. James Urban is a great football mind. Baltimore has the people around him to support him. And Lamar Jackson, his confidence is not wavering. Lamar Jackson understands that he is young. He is going to have a few bad games here and there. I think that's to be expected, and I know that he expects that as well. But for Baltimore and for Lamar Jackson, I'm confident in his development because we've seen the development. Even if it hasn't necessarily this season been in the box score department, there is a mental aspect, Russ. There is a technical aspect as well. But I think they're putting the right people around him and they will continue to do so. And if we see kind of a stagnant Ravens offense over the last few weeks of this season, we could see some changes. I wouldn't label everybody as safe. Cam Cameron was fired in the midst of a Super Bowl year. So at the end of the day, I think Lamar Jackson is getting the right people around him. Baltimore's inability to develop talent, I'd really only put on the wide receiver side of the game for Baltimore. And I think they're in good shape there. We're going to head into our first break here, but when we return, we're going to be talking with Locked On Colts about the Ravens and Colts matchup here in Week 9, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall. Break through it with Go every day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling, plus it's natural, so it's better for the body. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest Locked On NFL crossover special here. I am Evan Setter, the host of Locked On Colts, joined by Kevin Ostreicher of Locked On Ravens. Arguably the best game of the week on Sunday, in my opinion, Kevin. Colts versus Ravens at Lucas Oil Stadium at 1 o'clock start time. Two teams here that are vying for possibly the 2 seed in the AFC right now between 2-5-2 squads who are going up against each other. And personally, Kevin, I mean, this game really matches up well on paper. The Colts have really rebuilt this defense going against Lamar Jackson. They have Darius Leonard, DeForest Buckner up front, so that's going to be a really fun one. On the other side of the ball, Philip Rivers, we always know it's a close game when Philip Rivers is at quarterback. So this could be a really fun one here on Sunday. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Evan. I'm excited to talk to you about this one because I agree. It's going to be a good one, and I can't wait for it.
Absolutely. Let's hit on the Ravens first, though, Kevin, because like we were talking about off the air before we started here, a lot of Ravens news this past week. And let me ask you this off the top here. I know both could be Marlon Humphrey, of course, is out due to COVID-19. Ronnie Stanley is also out as well. It could be long-term. I haven't looked into it just yet, Kevin. So before we get started, just can you give an update here on Ronnie Stanley and Marlon Humphrey, those out there wondering?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll start with Ronnie Stanley. Not so great news for the Ravens as he was rolled up on in the first quarter by TJ Watt. Looked like a really, really gruesome injury. The overall diagnosis, I believe, is a dislocated ankle, a broken ankle as well. You have torn ligaments. He's done for the year. You know, no chance he plays on Sunday, definitely. It's a tough loss for Baltimore. What they have to do now is they have to move Orlando Brown, their right tackle, over to the left side and insert DJ Fluker, the backup at the right tackle position. And they lose a lot on both sides with this because Orlando Brown has been a right tackle by trade in the NFL. He played it very well at Oklahoma in college
And now he's moving over to the blind side, which is very different from the right side, both in college and the NFL. And then DJ Fluker, who was a mauler in the run game, but can sometimes struggle at the end of the day in pass protection. But yeah, the big news here, Evan, is definitely Marlon Humphrey and what's going on with the Ravens with the coronavirus. Marlon Humphrey, a very well-paid man now, signed a 5-year extension a few weeks ago. He is now on the COVID list. He tested positive early in the week. He had an illness on Wednesday of last week before the Pittsburgh Steelers game. He tested negative throughout the entire rest of the week. And the Sunday test, actually, before the game that they do, all the players throughout the NFL get a test on game day. And Marlon Humphrey, the results came back Monday, and he was positive. So he will not be suiting up in this game, which is a huge loss for Baltimore. And the Ravens, for the close contact tracing that the NFL did and that everybody did to figure out, all right, who was around Marlon Humphrey? Who might have this virus because they were around him? They had to place 7 of their defensive players on the reserve COVID list. Pretty much their entire middle linebacker room, Patrick Queen, you have Malik Harrison, LJ Fort. They had safety Deshaun Elliott go on the list, cornerback Terrell Bonds. There are a lot of guys on this list that are huge, huge impact players. But the good news for Baltimore, at least, is that if those players, they cannot practice all week, but if those players go through for their 5 days of COVID testing and they test negative all 5 days, they can play on Sunday against the Colts, which would be a huge boost. But again, no practice for those 5 guys. I think it hurts all around Baltimore's offense and everybody who is on the team right now. You know, there's kind of that aura around the building now. What if you have it? What if you have it? The Ravens are very confident. They're doing everything right. They're complying. But no practice for those guys, that could be huge. So it's been a very interesting week in Baltimore.
I know that you mentioned Ronnie Stanley is probably out for the year at this point, but just hypothetically speaking, Kevin, if both were just out for 1 week, who's the bigger loss for the Ravens, Stanley or Humphrey?
That's a good question. And I honestly think it's Humphrey. With the state that the Ravens team is in right now, I think moving Orlando Brown to the left side and Fluke to the right side, again, there's definitely a downtick in talent on both sides. But what Marlon Humphrey brings to this team, both as an outside and a slot corner, is something you really can't replicate. Baltimore is already super, super thin in their secondary. They always seem to go into the year with 18 million corners and lose like all but 3 of them. This season, it has been the same story. Tavon Young, their best slot cornerback, one of the best in the league, goes down in week 2 with a knee injury. He's done for the year. Anthony Averett, who filled in for him, and ultimately what the Ravens had to do was they shifted Marlon Humphrey inside, moved Anthony Averett outside. Averett goes down a few weeks ago with a shoulder injury. He's done for the foreseeable future. The team already lost Amon Marshall, their second-year guy out of USC, who's a corner. He was done for the year during the training camp that the league had before the season started. So now losing Humphrey, your only healthy corners on the active roster right now are Marcus Peters and Jimmy Smith, Khalil Dorsey, who's an undrafted rookie. And then if Terrell Bonds gets called up, that's a 4th guy, but he's on the COVID list right now, so who knows? Baltimore is extremely thin in the secondary right now. And even though Ronnie Stanley is phenomenal, Marlon Humphrey being a top 5 corner, both on the outside and in the slot, that's something you can't replicate.
Yeah, absolutely. Humphrey, like you mentioned, one of the best corners in the NFL, and he'll be desperately missed for Baltimore this Sunday. Even though the Colts are going to be probably without T.Y. Hilton as well due to a groin injury, it's going to be really interesting how this Colts receiving core matches up with the Ravens without Marlon Humphrey. But let's talk on Lamar Jackson for a moment, the MVP last year, who's been a little bit – hasn't been on the MVP level, so to say, like we saw last year, Kevin. This past week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, 2 interceptions. He also had a fumble as well. And over those last 3 games, looks like he has – 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. He's been a little hit and miss sometimes as far as accuracy goes. Obviously, Lamar is more known for his really elite speed as a runner and being able to get out in the open field and be a complete mismatch. And he's improved a lot as a passer since his Louisville days as well. But what's been going on with Lamar Jackson lately over the past couple weeks, last month or so?
Yeah, so definitely not what Lamar Jackson had been hoping for over the last few weeks. You mentioned that he has been struggling to an extent. And when I say to an extent, there were people across the league who kind of, you know, they saw his MVP season and they looked at it and they said, well, look, if he can play to this level, he's going to do it for the rest of his career, which is very, very unrealistic. You're not going to see him put up 36 touchdowns every year, do what he did on that blistering MVP campaign. But he has actually played relatively well and relatively similar to what he was doing at this point during that MVP campaign last season in 2019. Now, against Pittsburgh, Lamar Jackson has won Baltimore a lot of games. And, you know, you can't dispute that. Nobody can dispute it. But he definitely lost this one for Baltimore. 2 costly, costly interceptions, another costly fumble in the red zone. it was difficult for Lamar Jackson to kind of find a rhythm, and give credit to Pittsburgh. Their defense is amazing. But Lamar Jackson wanted to work on his deep ball accuracy and outside passing concepts in the offseason. The outside passing concepts, you know, everything looks good there. He looks a little better throwing those balls. The deep ball accuracy has not been, I think, what a lot of people were expecting in the improvement department. The Ravens have the personnel to do some stuff. Marquise Brown, the speedster, 379 yards receiving, currently leads this Baltimore team. Only two touchdowns, though. The big thing with the Ravens offense and Lamar Jackson is that it is very, I'll say, one-dimensional. The pass offense hasn't been able to hit on a lot of what they've wanted to hit on this season. It's really been the run game, which even so, Greg Roman has been very hesitant to use at times, which has been almost mind-boggling. There have been a lot of people out for Greg Roman this year because of his play calling choices, which have been suspect at times. So Lamar Jackson, he's playing well, but I think a lot of people expected a lot more from a stat department. Again, I think the statistical drop off for me was expected, but I think he's being more efficient with the football. The turnovers over the last few games have not been encouraging, but over the course of his career, he's been relatively safe with the football. So I'm not too worried.
Let's hit on the rookie running back, J.K. Dobbins, who finally had his breakout game on Sunday against Pittsburgh, 15 carries for 113 yards and an elite 7.5 yards per carry for Dobbins. And he's also been a really good asset in the receiving game as well when utilized there. Are we finally seeing the torch being passed through Kevin midway through the season where it looks like J.K. Dobbins is going to be the starter the rest of the way? I know Mark Ingram, look at the injury report as well for Baltimore. He might be out on Sunday as well.
Yeah, Evan, it's a good question. And honestly, I don't know. I think a lot of people want that to be the case, but knowing Baltimore, knowing how they love their committees, I don't necessarily see it that way. And the reason I say that is because the Ravens have four very capable running backs on this roster. You mentioned Mark Ingram. They have Gus Edwards, Dobbins, of course, and also Justice Hill. Now, Ingram is somebody who has not been performing up to expectations this season. It's been a slow season for Mark Ingram. That ankle sprain does not help things at all. It's looking like Ingram's going to be out this Sunday again. So against the Colts, I can definitely see Dobbins getting a big piece of this workload. But Gus Edwards is no slouch either. 64 carries for 305 yards. He's averaging 4.8 yards per carry. He's averaged 5 yards per carry throughout his entire career. So Edwards is somebody that the Ravens love to use. And the reason the Ravens are so successful on the ground is because they can insert a fresh pair of legs on you in the run game, whether it is Ingram, Edwards, Dobbins, Hill. In the fourth quarter, let's say, when the defensive line is gassed, the linebackers are tired, you can put in somebody who is a great runner who only has 3-4 carries in the game, and they can just go to work. So against the Steelers, we saw why Dobbins was a second-round pick by Baltimore in a relatively deep class at running back where they didn't necessarily need to pick a running back. Dobbins was somebody who was a surprise pick to some, and, you know, he has elite balance. He has not elite speed, but he's a power guy. Kind of reminds a lot of people of the on-the-field Ray Rice product. And so I certainly think Dobbins is going to be the running back one come next season. But right now, I think Baltimore's going to stick to their committee. And I think it's an efficient and good plan.
I think you should hit on as well the trade the Ravens made a couple weeks ago for Yannick Ngakoue from Minnesota. And Ngakoue's already bounced around from Jacksonville to Minnesota. They recouped that pick in Minnesota, sending him back to the Ravens, who sent a third-round pick out for Ngakoue, a win-now move for the Ravens, who see this window as being right now in the next couple of years, in my opinion. Ngakoue played on Sunday as well in a limited role. He's still getting used to the Ravens system. What's your thoughts on the Ngakoue move, and also is that defensive line now, including Ngakoue with his former teammate Calais Campbell, and also you see Matthew Judon on there as well?
Yeah, definitely a great move for the Ravens, giving up a third and a fifth-round pick. And the reason here, honestly, I think this is kind of an audition scenario. What I mean by that is the Ravens have three of their outside linebackers, four actually, who are going to be free agents at the end of this season, and Ngakoue included. This is a rental for Baltimore, but we saw the Ravens go out and acquire Marcus Peters last season, who was also a rental. Now, Baltimore was able to sign him to a nice extension for both sides. I think it was a bargain for Baltimore, but also a good deal for Peters. But with Ngakoue, he just gives the Ravens defense a lot more versatility. He's somebody who can win one-on-one. Baltimore's defense is very blitz-heavy. Don Martindale is an exotic blitzer. He will confuse quarterbacks at the line. He'll put eight up in the box and only rush three or four. He loves his blitzes. But what Ngakoue gives the Ravens is somebody who, against teams with those quick-hitting offenses, you know, for example, you know, I looked at the Chiefs and the Steelers. Those are teams where Baltimore needs to have those one-on-one winners because they need to be able to put more back in coverage. And so while blitzing is a big part of what Baltimore does, Ngakoue makes this defensive line super scary, especially you mentioned it, with Calais Campbell, but Matthew Judon and Yannick Ngakoue are going to be the two guys who I think are competing for a spot on Baltimore's roster next season. And Judon only has 2 sacks right now. Ngakoue on the year, he has 5. And I think that, you know, people pay for sacks. Judon is a great player in many different facets of the game for Baltimore, but I think he's going to demand money that Baltimore just can't give him, especially with the Lamar Jackson extension coming up. You have Marquise Brown, Orlando Brown. You just paid Marlon Humphrey and Ronnie Stanley a ton of money. So the Ravens can't keep everybody. It's a tough lesson in this league, especially with the salary cap. But overall, Ngakoue definitely makes this defense better. And with Yannick Ngakoue, you see a lot of this different things and you're going to see a lot of different looks from Baltimore that I don't think we've seen before this season from the Ravens.
Yeah, this Ravens defense is going to be fun to watch against this Colts offense on Sunday. And just to bounce back to the offense real quick, Kevin, before we pivot over to some Colts talk as well. For the Colts fans wondering out there, this Ravens offense is, of course, unique. They're a run-heavy system. They're one of the rare teams that are kind of zagging while everyone else is zigging towards the pass-heavy offense. For those just out there listening from the Indianapolis point of view, can you describe the Ravens offense, just how unique it is?
Yeah, definitely, Evan. It's extremely unique, and you mentioned it. This is a pass-heavy league in the NFL, but Baltimore is doing literally the exact opposite with their runners. And the Ravens employ a lot of RPO, but we've seen less of it this year. I think what Baltimore is trying to do is establish the pass game and say, you know, look, we can beat teams running the football, but we can do it passing the football as well. But what makes this offense unique for the Ravens is they can employ a lot of different sets that will make defenses think that it's one certain play, and at the end of the day, it's another. So, for example, on those RPO plays, if J.K. Dobbins is in the backfield for Baltimore on Sunday next to Lamar Jackson, and he does that RPO motion, there are 3 things that can happen. One thing that he can do is hand that ball straight up the middle and Dobbins can run. Another thing he can do is at the last very second, pull that ball down and bootleg to the outside, or he can just pull it down altogether, and that can be a pass play. So what the edge defenders for Indianapolis or whatever defense Baltimore is playing has to do is stay extremely disciplined, have gap discipline, because if they bite too hard on the J.K. Dobbins one up the middle, Lamar Jackson will see that and turn it to the outside. If the defensive end outside linebacker kind of edge contains on the outside, that's one less guy J.K. Dobbins has to make miss, and he will just hand that ball off. So it takes an extremely disciplined defense to play well against this Baltimore offense. And with the improved passing concepts, I'm hoping over the next few weeks that the Ravens will employ, Dez Bryant hopefully will make an impact for the Ravens. Plus the really great running game Baltimore has already, it's a really tough offense to stop unless you're super, super disciplined.
Let's move on here to our next segment, which is going to be talking about the Colts. Kevin will pepper me with some questions about Indianapolis, who is 5-2, just like they were last year, but we'll have to see if it's sustainable or not this time around, like it wasn't in 2019. Before we do so, though, a quick word from our sponsors. All righty, Kevin, we're back for segment 2. I'll give you the floor here now to ask some Colts questions.
Thanks, Evan. And this is a game that I think it's going to be a good one, kind of as you mentioned in the first segment. But, Evan, I think we have to start with how Phillip Rivers is performing this season. Now, a lot of people are calling him, you know, quote unquote, old, this, that, and the other. I don't think he's played that bad for the Colts. You look at it, 1,860 yards. He's thrown 10 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, has led this Colts team to a 5-2 record. What have you seen from Phillip Rivers so far this season?
Yeah, Rivers so far this year has been really good, in my opinion, at least especially the last 2 weeks. And I think it's just because no preseason, a limited training camp, no OTAs. I think he's still getting his overall adjustment period with this Colts offense. Of course, he has reunited Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni from the San Diego days. But I think you're now seeing Phillip Rivers really just getting in control of the offense. We saw in week 1, he had a couple rough interceptions from there. And then also against Cleveland, Chicago, just like his arm wasn't there, just missing a lot of things. And it's arguably, you can say both losses for the Colts this year are on Phillip Rivers, just due to turnovers, due to mental errors. But the last 2 weeks, especially against the Bengals before their bye week, and then this past week as well against the Lions, he's really been on fire, which is probably the best time to see it heading this tough schedule for the Colts next month, because Rivers has 6 touchdowns to only 1 interception in the last 2 games. And I think if he's able to keep playing like this, Kevin, he's going to be a player who's more so like the 2018 Phillip Rivers compared to 2019. If he keeps the ball out of harm's way, makes the efficient pass, makes some chunk plays here and there, he's going to be pretty good. He's a big upgrade for this Colts team anyways, or Jacoby Brissett last year, just being able to really take those risks where Brissett wouldn't. But it's been a little up and down, I'd say, for Rivers so far. But if this continues, at least from these last 2 games, he looks like a quarterback. He's probably going to be a top 10 quarterback the rest of the year. But this tough stretch, like I mentioned, is really going to tell us a lot about where Rivers truly is.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree, Evan. And I think Rivers has been a very nice acquisition for Indianapolis and what they've been able to do on offense this year. But I think a big part of their success on offense, Indianapolis' success on offense, is definitely the running game. We talked about the Ravens running game last segment, but I kind of want to key in here on this Colts rushing offense led by Jonathan Taylor, who has 100 carries on the year for 389 yards. But they also are getting nice contributions from Jordan Wilkins, from Nyheim Hines. Marlon Mack is injured, so obviously he's not a factor right now. But how impressed have you been with this Colts rushing offense?
Honestly, Kevin, I mean, compared to years past, I'm not as impressed, because we saw in 2018 and 2019, they were truly dominant on that front. Quentin Nelson, the rest of those guys up front were just mauling people left and right. But this so far this year, Kevin, I know while Ravens fans be surprised by this, the Colts are actually 32nd last in the NFL in yards per carry. They're really desperately missing Marlon Mack right now, under 4 yards per carry. Jonathan Taylor, I think, still getting his feet wet. He was actually benched in the second half of last week's game against Detroit because he just wasn't seeing the holes. He's averaging 2 yards per carry. He had 11 carries for 22 yards. And Jordan Wilkins finally getting that spark in the second half of that game, getting around 18 to 20 carries, almost 100 yards. He's like just a lot better at seeing the holes right now. And Taylor just is still trying to maneuver around it against NFL speed. It's a lot different compared to Big Ten defense that I imagine for Taylor. So really, the running game has been disappointing for me this year. I'm really expecting a breakout here soon. Hopefully Jordan Wilkins was that spark last week, but I think I expect the rest of the year more so a lion's share split between Wilkins and Jonathan Taylor with no Marlon Mack out there. Taylor really was the workhorse for the last 6 weeks, but he just hasn't been cutting outside of the Minnesota game week two where he had 26 carries for over 100 yards. But ever since then, it's just been really tough sledding for this Colts team. They're not really getting to the second level on blocks just yet. I think teams also just know that they're a run-heavy team. They're stacking the box. They're one of the teams facing the heaviest stack boxes in the league so far this year. They're not really gambling with Philip Rivers. They don't trust Rivers' arm, I imagine the defenses do. So maybe the last 2 weeks really do show that Rivers could maybe take some pressure off that running game, and maybe we see a breakout here soon, possibly on Sunday against this Ravens team. But honestly, Kevin, I'd say I'd be pretty disappointed so far compared to years past this Colts rushing attack because, I mean, maybe it's just surprising to say with Marlon Mack and his injury, but Mack just knew how to read those holes, be patient, and so far just Taylor has been patient. He's not really knowing how to hit those holes just yet and adjust to the NFL speed. He'll probably be a lot better this time next year, though. But really, I'd say the passing game has been more of a strength compared to the rushing attack so far this year.
Yeah, and I think part of it for Taylor, at least, and the Colts rushing offense might be the lack of preseason, the lack of a full offseason in the NFL. That's tough. It's certainly affected the Ravens. I'm sure it's affected every team in the NFL. But for the Ravens, the strength of their defense is definitely stopping the run. And so with a Colts rushing offense that's struggling, if the Ravens can make the Colts offense one-dimensional, I think that will be very good for them. But at the same time, as we kind of talked about in the first segment, Evan, the Ravens secondary is pretty beat up, but the Colts really, what seems like their only injury, you mentioned, T.Y. Hilton is a little banged up here. And so with T.Y. Hilton, let's assume he's out. What other receivers should Baltimore be looking out for that might hurt them a little bit?
Honestly, I'd probably say a surprise here who he was actually cut the last 2 seasons in training camp and brought back from the practice squad. And in so far, he's been thriving. Philip Rivers is Marcus Johnson, an unproven pro so far, his third year in the NFL. Used to be in Philadelphia with Frank Reich. He's really been Philip Rivers' deep target so far this year. T.Y. Hilton has been struggling a lot this year. I've been saying a lot on my podcast that this could be the twilight sort of swan song for T.Y. Hilton. He's in a contract year. Just looks like he's not the same anymore so far this year compared to years past. And Michael Pittman Jr. as well is another player, the Colts' top pick, 34th overall. He just got back from a leg injury last week, but he's a player I'd watch out for as far as the deep threat goes. He could be that new Mike Williams for this Colts offense that Philip Rivers loves to use. But I think so far, I mean, the receiving core hasn't proven much to me, but if I had to have two people, if I was a Ravens fan, to watch out for, it's Marcus Johnson, it's Michael Pittman Jr., because those two guys can take the top off of defense, and I think they're the most trustworthy guys so far for Philip Rivers. But even the tight ends, I'd say, are probably more important to this team right now than the wideouts. Mo Alie-Cox is having a breakout year. Jack Doyle is always reliable. They love Trey Burton, too, the former Bears tight end. So I'd say those four or five guys are there would be the ones I'd watch out for, especially with no T.Y. Hilton. Probably going to be a heavy tight end game and one where they'll try to establish the run as much as they can. But watch out for Johnson and Pittman, but as well as those tight ends.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely want to move on to the defensive side of the ball here before we get into our predictions, Evan. Talking about this Colts defense that has been actually very, very good this year. I think led by Darius Leonard doesn't lead the team in tackles, but still 36 tackles. He has a sack, 4 tackles for loss. And I think the acquisition of DeForest Buckner, that has paid off big dividends for Indianapolis. 2.5 sacks for him on this year. And then you have other guys who have been contributing. Xavier Rhodes has been, you know, a guy who was thought to be washed and ultimately came into Indianapolis and has performed very well this season. Justin Houston, 3.5 sacks, one of my favorite players in the NFL. What have you seen from an Indianapolis perspective on this Indianapolis defense, Evan?
Yeah, DeForest Buckner really was the crown jewel acquisition to take this defense from being average to possibly elite so far this year, Kevin. He's really helped out everyone on this team. Even though the sack numbers won't show, he's such a disruptor up front in the run game and pass game. He's helping out guys like you mentioned, Justin Houston, Grover Stewart at nose tackle. And you see guys as well, like Tyquan Lewis, 2018 second round pick, finally breaking out the last 2 weeks, 2.5 sacks in his last two games. And lots of things due to Buckner, who's right next to him, where he's taking so much pressure off those guys up front, constant double teams. Darius Leonard as well is running free more often because of Buckner. The secondary has less pressure on because Buckner's getting home to the quarterback more often in a quicker time. He's really changed his whole defense, in my opinion. He's so worth the money that the Colts paid for him this past offseason, that trade, getting trade number 13 overall, their first-round pick for Buckner, which I think looking back on was a steal of an acquisition because Buckner, I think, is right below Aaron Donald right now as far as the top disruptors at defensive tackle in the NFL. And it just goes to show you just how impactful the three technique is for this Colts defense. Their heavy zone scheme, it helps guys like Xavier Rhodes too, who I think is really doing well outside of that man scheme in Minnesota. He had a really more often on an island than he was in years past. But this year, though, he has a lot of help inside and outside. Kenny Moore, their slot guy, is so versatile. I think one of the more underrated defensive backs in the NFL. You have guys like Julian Blackman, the rookie free safety who replaced Malik Hooker, who tore his Achilles in week two. He's been a revelation so far, a possible dark horse defense rookie of the year candidate, in my opinion. He's been so impactful as far as being a ball hawk goes. So many young guys ascending at the right time for this Colts team. And, of course, Darius Leonard, not much has to be said there because he's so impactful. We've seen his first 3 years, and he came back from an injury, a groin injury this past week against Detroit. He was the reason they won the game. He had a strip sack fumble on a blitz, and that really turned the tide against Detroit. From there, Detroit was driving down the field. They're about to take the lead. Leonard gets that fumble. And then from there, the Colts outscored the Lions the rest of the way 21-7 to win 41-21. Those two guys, Leonard and Buckner, really spearhead this defense. But young guys like a Tyquan Lewis, a Julian Blackman, Xavier Rhodes finally reviving himself. And if Kamoko Ture plays this upcoming Sunday, which is a possibility to be a season debut for him after his gruesome leg injury last year against the Kansas City Chiefs, he'd be an elite speed rusher off the edge there who could try to contain Lamar Jackson. So I really like this Colts defense right now. It's really being more exotic with Matt Eberflus, their defensive coordinator, not playing cover two as much, more so cover three, cover one, being more, I would say less simplistic in their scheme, which is really helping out guys like I mentioned Xavier Rhodes on the outside. So this Colts defense, I think, is legit so far. I think this next 3-4 games will really tell us a lot about them, and especially Sunday against Lamar Jackson, because I feel like this defense, honestly, Kevin, is built to stop a guy like Lamar Jackson. They have Leonard. They have Buckner. They have Bobby Okereke, a linebacker. All these speed guys with length that can go out and try to stop and contain his rushing lanes, as well as J.K. Dobbins. So this is going to be a fun one on Sunday. I really think it's going to be decided between this Ravens offense versus this Colts defense.
Yeah, I do too, Evan. If the Ravens offense can get on track, and obviously that's going to be very tough against this Colts defense, it's going to shape up to be a very, very good game. But Evan, finally, I do want to get into some final score predictions with you. How do you see this one going?
I think, Kevin, I've been saying on the podcast earlier this week, I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think we're going to see a game where the Colts are going to try to play ball control, keep it out of Lamar Jackson's hands as much as possible. And I think if Rivers keeps the ball out of harm's way, try to maybe run some play action, take a couple deep shots here and there. If Jordan Wilkins and John Taylor get the running game going a little bit more often, I think they could stop this Ravens offense. I trust this defense from what I've seen so far. DeForest Buckner, if he's able to go against this offensive line and have success, if Darius Leonard runs more free and is able to be a spy on Lamar Jackson, keep him out of his rushing lanes, I think the Colts win this one. They're 2.5-point underdogs at home per DraftKings right now from what I'm seeing. But I'm going to go Colts 24, Ravens 16. I'm expecting a game where whoever gets in that mid-high 20s first is going to win here. So I'm going to go with an upset here. I'm going to go Colts 24, Ravens 16. That could easily flip the other way, honestly.
Yeah, and this is a game for me, Evan, that's super, super tough to predict. And if the Ravens had Ronnie Stanley and they had Marlon Humphrey, this would be a totally different ball game. But I agree with you. I think it's going to be a slugfest. You know, potentially very high scoring, even though both defenses are elite units. But I think Baltimore's going to just slightly, like literally slightly edge this one from the Colts. I'll say it'll be 31-30 Ravens. And the reason I say that is because I do think that even despite the loss of Marlon Humphrey, the Ravens defense will be able to contain the Colts offense. They'll be able to make them one-dimensional to be a passing offense only. They'll be able to kind of clog up the running lanes. And I think the pressure could get to Phillip Rivers just a little bit. So I'll say Ravens 31, Colts 20. But Evan, this was great. Thanks for doing this crossover with me. And hopefully we just have a good game on Sunday.
Again, a big thanks to Evan for our two segments of crossover. Great to talk to him. And this is going to be a really exciting game. But that's all that we have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, it's more Ravens talk. We'll finish up answering the mailbag questions we received here for Locked On Ravens and get into our game preview for Ravens at Colts. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.